The world's population grows by more than 200,000 daily. That's tens of millions of people annually. To feed them, food production must nearly double by 2050. That's a task. Doing that in the face of climate change, the scarcity of land and water presents one of the world's greatest challenges. Plants are stressed by drought, disease, and non-native competitors. But people need to eat, no matter where they are. You're listening to The Food Fix, a podcast where we talk with innovators who are figuring out how to better feed the world. My name is Petulano Ali, and in this episode, we talk with Michigan State University researcher Brad Day. He is creating tools to unlocking the secrets of plants and better feed the world. They could produce more resilient, stress-tolerant crops that use water and nutrients more efficiently. Brad Day, thank you so much for joining me on The Food Fix.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I mean, that must be very daring to try to unlock the secrets of plants.
It is. It's kind of like solving a puzzle daily. New challenges and opportunities present themselves. My group interacts broadly with other faculty and scientists here at MSU as well as around the world. And so when you have a great team of like-minded individuals that are coming together to solve, you know, one of the most pressing challenges of our generation, of potentially any generation, it's a great opportunity. It's a great responsibility.
So I'm kind of wondering, what kinds of stress do plants go through?
If you think about how plants live their lives in comparison to us, they encounter many of the same stresses that we do. The difference being that plants are sessile. They can't just walk away from a stress. They can't necessarily find shade when it becomes too sunny or too hot out. They can't go get a drink of water when they're thirsty. So many of the stresses that they face are abiotic stresses, such as scarcity of water, scarcity of nutrients, poor quality of soil would be one, high temperatures, low light quality. And then there's a whole suite of biotic stresses, which are even stacked upon the abiotic stresses, make life even more challenging. So you've got insects, you've got weeds and pests and bacteria and fungi. So again, very similar to the types of stresses that we feel as human beings, plants face the same challenges.
So we're going to talk about that more in detail in the course of our discussion, but let's roll back to this. You are founding scientist of MSU's Institute of Plant Resilience. What's the goal of this institute?
So the goal of this institute is to continue to maintain and as well as raise the position of MSU in the plant sciences around the world. What we're interested in doing is bringing faculty on campus as well as recruiting new faculty to Michigan State to focus on translating the fundamental knowledge that we generate in the lab into real-world solutions that can ultimately feed the world.
So what have you discovered about how plants defend themselves from unfavorable environmental conditions and disease?
So one of the biggest challenges that we're looking at, it's a growth defense paradigm. Plants only have so much energy, and they must make a decision, do I grow, produce food, produce seed, you know, perpetuate the next generation? Or do they spend that energy defending themselves not only from pests and pathogens, but also from scarcity of water? So it's this growth balance, it's this growth defense balance that we see as a key target for our research. And some of the major discoveries that we've identified is not only, you know, understanding how plants use energy to grow and defend and to fix carbon, et cetera, but also too, their immune systems, the way that they defend themselves against pathogens, are very similar to the way we as humans and as animals defend themselves against pathogens. So not only do we learn a lot about how plants behave and respond to changes in environment, but we can use this information as well to understand how we as humans can better defend, or basic underlying mechanisms, how we defend against these stressors as well.
What's your goal?
The goal ultimately is to start delivering some of the knowledge, much of the knowledge, if you will, that we've generated in the lab, and to create crops that can feed the world. You know, we're going to hit 10 billion people in about 35 years. And like you said, we're going to have to double food production annually to meet this goal. And we're going to have to do it. There's not another planet out there that we can, you know, just start growing our crops on. We have a limited amount of space to grow crops. We have marginal lands that are opportunities. We can start to understand how we can grow plants in places where they have not been grown before. We can understand how to generate plants, or how plants can better adapt to changes in the environment. It's not so much that the temperatures are rising, right? The data is out there to suggest that, you know, each year, unfortunately, for the last several years has been the warmest year on record, and we don't see an end to that. The biggest challenges facing plants are these extreme events where it can be, you know, 120 degrees, 130 degrees in certain parts of Africa. And in the same year, it can dip into the low 20s in Taiwan. So it's these extreme weather conditions that we really need to understand and how plants can adapt to these swings in temperature and light and water.
Now, I want you to tell our listeners some of the plants you work with and why you choose those plants.
So at a basic level, and much of my research is funded to understand the fundamental genetic mechanisms that plants use to defend against pathogens or to tolerate stress. And so with these plants, Arabidopsis thaliana, for example, it's a model system. It's the white mouse. It's the Drosophila, the fruit fly of plant sciences. There's a certain advantage to using this system because it's a very small genetic architecture. It's like working on a model car as opposed to working on an F1 race car. It's a little bit more manageable. It's a little bit easier to wrap your brain around. It's a little bit easier, more amenable to genetic manipulation to understand the basic mechanisms. But what we started doing in the past 3 to 5 years is started working more on crop systems, food systems. And what better place than Michigan State University? We have over 300 commodities grown in this state because we have this plethora of food. We're in the breadbasket. We have 20% of the world's fresh water. We can grow anything from apples and blueberries and cucumbers and grapes and wine to our cattle industry and beans. Where are opportunities for us to build upon existing strengths? Back up 5 years or so, we started working in cucumber with some other researchers here at Michigan State University. Cucumber is a major commodity for Michigan State. We are the number one producer of pickles in the United States. So it's an important industry for Michigan. In the last year or so, as part of the Plant Resilience Institute, what we've done is come together as a group of scientists and said, you know, Michigan State is probably the world's leader in bean research. We are the number one producer in certain varieties of beans in the state. It's a staple food all around the world. Many parts of Africa depend on bean for cowpea, et cetera, for their daily protein intake. We've made a conscious effort that we're going to focus our next thrust, you know, next 3 to 5 years of research, really understanding and developing and working with current breeders here and developing new resilient varieties of beans that can be grown around the world. And that benefits not only those of us here in Michigan, but also around the world. And beans very amenable to genetic selection. We know a lot about it. It's a very powerful tool. And two, the opportunity exists to really start to understand if we can grow beans on marginal lands, meaning land that is less favorable to grow other crops, such as corn, wheat, or soybean. Bean can be grown in these areas. So it represents a great opportunity with a lot of upward potential.
So I'm trying to wrap my brain and understand exactly how your research or how your work ensures food security.
So on a day-to-day basis, so example of a series of experiments that we might perform or a series of questions or hypotheses that we might want to test is, can we find in a panel of bean varieties, and right now we have a phenomenal resource with an Andean diversity panel, more than 500 different lines of beans, and they exhibit different traits, different abilities to grow in different regions. They're all quite similar, but some perform a little bit better than others. Some require a little bit less water than others. Some are a little bit more tolerant to pests or pathogens than others. But really, to understand this, we need to understand the basic mechanisms, the genetics. You know, we often talk about who we are. Who we are is defined by our ancestry. It's defined by our parents. We each have the genes, the genetic composition provided by each of our parents. Plants are no different. So if we can trace back that ancestry of plants and understand, why is this plant growing the way it does? Why does it grow faster than a tree? If we can understand those basic mechanisms, we can then work with breeders to facilitate and expedite our understanding and the delivery of crop varieties that are better suited for certain environments. So for us, it's not only about understanding the basic mechanisms, but it's really about delivering that perfect crop for that environment. Wouldn't it be great if we could grow every food in the world in every location, right? Why don't we grow wheat or corn in the desert where you have mainly cactuses? It's because of water availability and the temperatures and the salinity of the soil. We may never achieve that goal, but if we can create plants or we can select plants that are out there in the breeding population, if we can select these plants to grow in specific regions, to tolerate specific stressors, I think these are the incremental steps moving forward that we need to make to meet the goal of 10 billion people by the year 2050.
There is some kind of political argument right now that climate change is a myth. But like you said, there is data, there is evidence out there to show that temperatures are really getting warmer.
Right.
And we're trying to solve a problem here. I mean, you know how the population grows.
Mm-hmm.
How do we feed the world without harming the environment?
Well, that's part of the goal of our research is adapting plants so that the inputs that we have to make on the environment are less. I often get the question about GMO technology and the application of more pesticides. Of course, no one wants to be applying more pesticides. I think part of creating an agricultural system, a global agricultural system, is also educating people to be stewards of the environment we have. Soil, for example, water, these are precious commodities, precious resources that we must protect. So in parallel to creating plants to grow in environments, we also want to create plants that don't suck these resources out of the environment. We would love to grow, and we need to grow plants that are not additional strains on the environment. But at the same time, we need to protect the environment we have. So the argument that, you know, that climate change is not real, you look at the weather that we have here in Michigan, we have extreme swings of weather. We've fortunately not hit the high temperatures that, you know, people often use as a standard argument. We've got more than a foot of snow outside. So on the surface, you'd say, well, you know, climate change is not real because look, we've got a foot of snow in early December, whereas last year we didn't have this much snow until January or February. It's these extreme weather swings. Those are underpinned by climate change. These extreme changes in weather is what we really need to be mindful of when we start producing or start thinking about how we're going to produce food to feed the world.
Where is this work headed? What are you going to do next?
I think one of the great opportunities that we have in fundamental science research is, and this is, I think, really reflected in the types of the decisions that we're seeing coming down from the funding agencies, such as the National Science Foundation or the U.S. Department of Agriculture, is that no individual resource or no individual researcher can do this alone. It's going to require, you know, different kinds of people working together to solve a single problem. And I think where this research is really going to take us is we're going to be working with engineers and computer scientists and people that work on human biology and human health and nutrition and plant biology and breeders. It's going to take a team of individuals with the dedicated goal that we need to produce healthier food, more resilient plants to deliver the nutrition that people need to thrive. We not only need to produce more food, we need to produce healthier food for the population. A lot of people don't get the caloric intake that they need on a day-to-day basis. But if we can find ways to select plant varieties that provide the nutrition, that provide the vitamins and the minerals in lesser doses of food, in certain parts of the world, that would suffice.
Brad Day is an associate professor and associate chair for research in the Department of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences at Michigan State University. We've been talking about his work on plant resilience and extreme conditions. Dr. Day, thank you so much for talking to the Food Fix and all the best in your work.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Do you have or know a way that we can improve food security or make plants resist extreme conditions? Email us with questions and comments at foodfixpodcast@gmail.com. And that's it from me, Petulano Ali, on this episode of The Food Fix, produced by the Translational Scholars Program at Michigan State University. Funding for The Food Fix is provided by the Global Center for Food Systems Innovation at MSU, a development lab funded by USAID. Our theme music is the song Watching My Garden Grow by two of our favorite Michigan artists, Lindsay Liu and Josh Railco. Thank you for listening. And have a great day.